Welcome to Tales from the Creek. I'm Stan Cole, class of 1987, and today we continue our conversation with Campbell Hall of Famer Wanda Watkins. Our guest today on Tales from the Creek is Wanda Watkins. We are trying to cover 50 years of Wanda's career, five decades. She's in her 49th year at Campbell University, and visiting with her about her career arc here. So Wanda, you take the job in the fall of 81. You're the head coach. It seems today a lot of coaches, a lot of people in jobs and in whatever field it is, they have a career arc plan. I'm going to go do this for a little while, then I'm going to move to this, and I'm going to step to that. And could you have ever imagined in August, September 1981, that you would still be getting the paycheck in March of 2024 at the same place?
No. You know, I was much like most players. I thought that I would get my degree and move on. And it's just unusual, but at the same time, even some of the opportunities that I had along the way, it was always clear to me that this was where God wanted me to be. I was doing what I was called to do, and I've never really regretted any opportunities that I turned down or had to consider. I've never really regretted it, because it's been a good life.
Absolutely. Wanda, you shared with me early on, you shared an office with Press Maravich, and some of the knowledge that you gained from him, he had been brought in to be Coach Roberts' assistant and then later with Jerry Smith. Tell us a little bit about Press, of course, father to Pete Maravich, former head coach at Clemson and NC State and LSU, and, you know, the inventor of homework basketball.
Yeah, my experience with Press was just, it was such fun. Looking back on our relationship, first time I met or even talked to Press personally was I had our team out on the track. And at the time, the track was over where the football field is. And we were doing sprints and doing our workouts and stuff in postseason. And he came up and asked me, what in the world was I doing with a basketball team on the track? What did I think that had to do with winning basketball games? And that's how our relationship started. And so we were going at it, you know, and I was trying to explain to him what I was trying to do and the beauty of what I was trying to do. And he wasn't backing down and I wasn't backing down. And from that day on, we became the best of friends. And he would, we were over in the Lynch building at the time. Billy Lee was coaching. Jerry Smith was actually coaching. Jerry was actually coaching when Press was here. And Press was kind of like a consultant to Jerry. And Press would come in the mornings. My office was downstairs and his was upstairs. And he would come in the mornings and he would sit in my office every morning for about an hour and just share stories with me about the game, about Pete, about himself. We'd talk about the team, our teams, and it was just a joyful time. And I still have like the shuffle offense where he diagrammed it and was showing me all about that. I still have that paperwork laying actually on my desk. I came across it when I was cleaning out my office, and just brought back great memories. The stories he used to tell about Pete and how he would make him dribble in the station wagon when they were going places or in the movie theater. And I used to think Press was such a great storyteller. I used to think a lot of that was fabricated and that he was making, you know, just blowing some of this stuff out of proportion until I saw the movie The Pistol. And then it hit me. Oh, my gosh, these were really true stories. But he would tell stories about how he told me how the 3-2 zone got invented was because they were playing and it rained that night in the gym. And they had to move somebody off the back row up to the front row. And that he swore to me that's how the 3-2 came about.
Because a puddle was on the floor?
A puddle was on the floor. And you know, it was wonderful hearing the stories because he was legendary and he had an amazing, amazing basketball mind. But it was even greater person, just a tremendous person that I enjoyed so much working with.
Wanda, you've mentioned some of the coaches that you've worked with and shared offices with and shared a floor in a university with, but you know, being a part since the summer of 76, I guess, of the Campbell Basketball School, and especially those first 20 years, the next 20 years span, the icons of the game, some of the most incredible players and coaches, and some of the most incredible female coaches and players coming through this place as well. Who are some of the other folks that you came across and that you in your role and were able to, you had to recruit coaches to come work here and players to come work here? Who are some of the other folks that you came across during those days?
Well, when Danny started the girls basketball school, he brought Kay Yao and Norlin came, and they worked 1 week, and then so, you know, having Coach Al on campus, and then over the years getting to know her and what a legendary person she was, and just a tremendous person. And I can remember the greats like Pat Head Summit, Billy Moore came from all the way from UCLA. Billy Moore, at the time when she came, she forgot her tennis shoes, and I can remember having to get one of our players to give her some shoes to wear. We had Gail Gaston, of course, came. Sylvia Hatchell would come, and Sylvia would come and work a whole week, a lot of years, until the latter years. And then she would come and speak, and many of their players would come and spend the week and work down here for a week at the time. And then, you know, working the boys' camp some too, some of the most legendary people in the game, Coach Wooden, would come and spend a week at the time. Michael Jordan, Lefty Driesell, you name it, anybody in the sport was here on this campus, and they all had a charisma about them, and it was always on the local news. But they were, when it came down to it, when they came and they, whether they were a guest speaker or they came and spent the week here working, they had a passion for the sport and they loved kids. Or they wouldn't have been here. And I think Danny and Fred were legendary in starting all this, and the mastermind behind Coach McCall. And yeah, it was not a simple process to run a basketball school of the magnitude. We were the oldest and the largest in the country. And it was not simple to run that basketball school. You didn't have to become a part of it administratively, but one time to learn. It took a smart person to come up with all that organization and all the formalities that were involved, getting people from all across the country during that day and age, and the best in the sport to come here. You still can't go anywhere without stepping off of an elevator with somebody knowing something about, oh yeah, Campbell. My grandson went to basketball school there. My granddaughter went to basketball school there. Still run into that to this day. But I can remember when Billy and I shared an office, and his camp would fill completely up. And we were recommending other camps for kids to go to because we had 1,000 camps. He'd have 1,000 campers each week, and we didn't have anywhere else to put them in Bowers Creek. They were hanging out of the windows everywhere you turned. And then we would have, I think one of our best years, we probably had 450, 500 kids, which was much larger than anyone else in the state at the time. It was phenomenal. And And then other people started to catch on to it, and they started to grow. And then AAU became larger and more prestigious and more of an essential for people to play. And our numbers went down somewhat than what they were back in those days. But it was fun. And it was a week of basketball, 1, 2, or 3 days. You come in on Sunday and you leave on Thursday at lunchtime. There was a lot of basketball.
Wanda, we've talked a little bit about some of the changes. I think that some people, when they think of college athletics today, they see the bright lights and the TV attention, and they see the name, image, and likeness that people are able to make, and you know, some college athletes in certain sports may never play professionally, but they may be making six figures based on their social media presence or things like that. Share with me about how many scholarships you had to work with your first year as a coach, and how you spread that over a 10, 12 player roster.
Yeah, absolutely. I had 3 scholarships, and I only had 3 because I went into Coach Carr's office and begged to get that other half of a scholarship so I'd have 3 my first year coaching here. And what you did was you took that money and you spread it out, like you said, over 10 or 12 other players, and you went after a kid that was really smart or a kid that was really poor or a combination of both, mm-hmm. where they could get a lot of financial aid. And that's how you did it. And you found a way to do it. And we were pretty fortunate. I mean, we had some good players to come through our program, and we had to go out and outwork a lot of people. We probably wrote a kid 300 letters that might get 3 or 4 from a Power 5. You know, we were constantly writing them every week. We were calling them when we could call them. We worked hard to make it happen. And that's just the way it was then. It was just a way of life and a way you did it. And the longer I coached, the more it continued to grow. The opportunities began to come. It became more of a higher profile sport now. Basketball is more of a higher profile sport now for women. And that's a good thing, because kids are getting now what they've always deserved. But now I'm a little old school when it comes to all this NIL and the transfer portal. That is all still very different for me. I got out of coaching and moved to administration in 16. And whenever I did, there was no transfer portal and there was no NIL. I think I got out at a good time for me. Being older, I'm just a little old school. And for me, the opportunity to go to college and get a scholarship and play and get all this cost of attendance money and all this stuff is a wonderful opportunity. Be it old school than I am. I liked coaching in a day where it was an opportunity. You felt like it was an opportunity and a privilege to be able to play on a team, and getting a scholarship to go to college was a dream come true for you.
Not to get off on a subject that we could fill up several podcasts with, but Wanda, are we as a society or as sports fans, are we devaluing the education process for the immediate gain? Or can you tell where I'm leaning on that in some ways? And, you know, my career has been supported by college athletics. Mm-hmm. Are we, as the NCAA or whatever, are we letting the cart get before the horse in some ways?
Well, being old school like I am, I'd have to say that some of this I would question and worry about. As a lover of athletics, I worry about it. And, you know, I can remember talking even back when we were the Big South at our annual meetings to NCAA representatives that would come, and I can remember saying to the representative, what are we teaching these young people? Are we teaching them that when things don't go well, we can just leave and try to go somewhere else and it'll be different, when in all actuality, it's going to be the same way probably? And, you know, I like the old way of teaching in that where there was a lot of loyalty to when you committed to do something, you stuck to your word and you did it. All our student athletes are going to come after me with shotguns after saying all this stuff. But, I mean, I like that. I like there's something to be said for the fact that we need to be loyal about what we do and not to make ourselves miserable. And I understand that there are always exceptions where things can happen and something doesn't always work out well for someone. But I worry that we're teaching the wrong lessons when we can just up and go and then in an instant and think that things will be better. And the grass is not always greener.
Wanda, I know there's probably a million stories you could tell from the recruiting trail or the locker room, but one of your former teammates and colleagues wanted me to make sure I asked you about the recruitment of Tanya Caldwell and what Mrs. Caldwell, Tanya's mother, was asking about in that, if you could share that story.
Wow, this goes way back, but Rhonda was my assistant, who's one of our Hall of Famers as well, and one of my dear friends to this day. And Rhonda was my grad assistant that year, and Rhonda had a way of just really dressing so nice. Not that I didn't, but Rhonda could outdress anybody. And so we went down to Tanya's game that night, and Tanya was someone that we really wanted to come and play here. And so after the game, we were allowed to go down into the locker room and talk to families then. And so Tanya's mom went down to the locker room, and I was just talking a mile a minute, trying to sell Miss Caldwell over on our program at Campbell and what all we had to offer and how it was such a down-home, friendly place, family atmosphere, all this stuff. As I got to know her later in life, she said she told Tanya after we were meeting with her that she wanted that little lady to hush and she wanted to hear from that big lady. And she was talking about Rhonda, who was about 6'2", and was all dressed up in a dress and everything. And she wanted the little lady to hush and she wanted to hear from the big lady. So she thought Rhonda was the head coach and I was the assistant coach. Oh, that was funny. We'd still laugh about that with Miss Caldwell, who still turned 92 just a few weeks ago and is still an avid supporter of women's basketball. In fact, I think her bags were packed and she was ready to go to D.C. Had we won that game with Stony Brook, she was ready and was coming to D.C. for the game that night.
Smokes. I'm going to go down a few names here. If you want to just give me a couple brief things, the first things that pop into your mind, some of the most notable players. Of course, we can't put everybody in there, but these are some that have gotten some special recognition. Antoinette Matthews.
Well, one of the all-time greatest. Had she come up in a different age, she probably would have had professional opportunities. Tremendous player, one of 10 NAIA first-team All-Americans, one of 10 in the country. Unbelievable post player from Harney Central High School. Tremendous person. Still keep in touch with her today.
Regina McKeithen.
A character who did play professionally in Luxembourg. I think Luxembourg has been our ticket. We've had a lot of our players that have played professionally played in Luxembourg. Regina is a person who really took advantage of her opportunity in college, was extremely intelligent, went on and had an executive level with the airlines, and is now retired and is living down in Texas with her family and her daughter's coaching now, but one of the greatest rebounders and explosive players to play the game here.
Denise Ford.
When I think about Denise Ford, I think about heart. I just think about heart. She was our MVP on our Big South Championship team in 1989. And since that time, I've had her back on numerous occasions where she'd come in here and speak to teams. One of the most motivating people you will ever meet, just has more heart than anything you can ever imagine, just a tremendous person, and was a great player, helped put us on the map.
Tammy Brown.
Tammy, all these years later, Tammy was at our game last weekend, she and her husband David, and she was just inducted into the Fayetteville Sports Club Hall of Fame. And Tammy had an unbelievable knack for scoring. She had great range as a player. She could stop in the trail spot and knock that shot in, and yet she could go down there and pin up inside, and was just, all these years later, still the all-time leading scorer at Campbell University. Unbelievable. We got to get her jersey in the top of that gym. It definitely belongs up there. Tremendous person, a person of great faith. And she and David were dating when she played for me, and now they have two grown daughters. And I love them both dearly. But Tammy was a humble player who never acted like she was worthy of anything that she was truly worthy of. Very, very humble player and one of the best.
And then one who played for you and then was on the sidelines with you for decades, Mary Weiss.
Mary was a lot like me. She was a hard-headed point guard, and we would butt heads all the time, and yet one of our greatest assets in this program, to have, you know, I always tell people there was a person behind me that was recruiting all these people, mm-hmm. and that was Mary Weiss for 30-some-odd years. Unheard of. Think of people like Bill Guthridge, Andrew Calder, who worked with Sylvia Hatchell at Carolina, and Mary Weiss. I put her right there with them, who could have had many head coaching positions but never wanted to be a head coach, enjoyed her role as an assistant coach. So I'll always be indebted to Mary for her loyalty. And in my opinion, she's a true Hall of Famer.
Wanda, 35 years of coaching, well over 500 victories. Do the wins stand out, or I always hear some coaches that say you remember the losses more than the wins, but what are a couple that really stand out in your mind?
Well, I think the relationships are what really, you hardly ever remember the scores, but you remember the journey and the people you made it with. And those relationships are, you know, when we have events here and people come back, it's relationships that keep them coming back. Mm-hmm. There's always something special, I think, about those championship teams, though, and what they persevere and overcome. I've always been impressed with that. Certainly our 89 and 2000 championships were huge. The win over Florida International when they were ranked, I think 21 at the time when we beat them in Carter. The win over Wake Forest. I don't know. Our first win in the Convocation Center was special, but I don't even remember who it was with. We were so excited to be here. But I think you look back over that many wins stretch out over a long, 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 long way. And it is definitely not the wins you remember. It's the relationships that you develop along the way. Who makes the journey with you? Who stands by you in the trenches? Who never says die? Those are the things that you never forget.
You had the chance to work at one time, one of the smallest seating capacity buildings in the country, and then certainly got to enjoy the summer camp with no air conditioning over in Carter Gym.
Yeah.
Wanda, what was it like when you finally stepped in the fall of 2008, moved into the office and into the Pope Convocation Center?
I kept waiting for somebody to pinch me. Stan, And it seems funny now, but our kids would almost get lost when they come over here. And they would say to me, "Coach, is this really ours?" Because we had spent all those years over there, and we learned not to talk a lot about it. We tried to accentuate the positive, and we would tell kids everything that glitters is not gold. And yet we'd get in that locker room, and there would be a post in the middle of the room, and we'd have to dodge the post to watch film. And all those things that you just overlooked over the years, and then you got over to the new arena, and it was just like a dream come true. It was, now this is going to be the first stop that we bring a recruit, not the last. And to be quite honest, if we brought a recruit to Carter and we had a game, we're okay. Mm-hmm. But if it was in the dead of the season and we weren't playing, it was hard for someone to visualize the home court advantage that we had in there. But when we got over to the Convocation Center, it still was cozy enough that it felt at home. After a few weeks, it started to feel at home. And I was happy, I think, first and foremost for the kids, that they were playing in an arena that they could really, really be proud of and share it with recruits when they came to campus. And it helps recruiting. Aesthetically, it helps because young people like material. They're materialistic sometimes.
Robbie Lang, who you and Robbie Lang have the only distinction of being head coaches at Campbell in both Carter Gym and Gore Arena, the Pope Convocation Center, said that the curb appeal improved greatly when they moved across the street.
Yeah.
However, y'all were able to recruit outstanding people and players. If you go back to the days even before Robbie, Joe Spinks, mm-hmm. Conference Player of the Year, NCAA participant, mm-hmm. decided to come here before the arena. Mm-hmm. April Cromartie, you can go down the whole long list of mm-hmm. players. Mm-hmm. What were the key things that you focused on when you were recruiting that an individual?
Well, first we sold people on the school.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody could touch us there, and we tried to bring in a family oriented person that would fit in well to the family atmosphere at Campbell. We sold the home court advantage. We sold the down home community. I mean, we had diehards when we were over there in Carter that would buy those seats to sit on the floor. And if somebody passed away, somebody was calling the athletic office the next morning trying to get their seat. It was that bad. Those were things that you know, you talk to kids about. You talk to families about the fact you could come to Campbell, your daughter could come to Campbell and be amongst people that cared about her. From the top all the way down to the bottom. And oftentimes families were sold quicker even than the young person.
Mm-hmm.
But usually if they were a family-oriented kid and those things were important to them, they would get a good take and a good feel when they got to campus, because we would have them visit with our administration. We would have them visit with their professors. We would have them sit in a class, and the professors would talk to them. Whoever their major area was, they would sit down and meet with that person. So we were able to share a personal touch with these kids, and that was important to the ones that we recruited.
One, in 2016, you decided to hang up your whistle, so to speak. Was it just time? Was it just...
Yeah, I think the year before, it was pulling on me a little bit. And I thought, I was always so exhausted at the end of a season. And I thought at the end of the season before that I was tired and I was exhausted, because you always were. And then it became more real to me that last year. And I'll always be so grateful to Bob, because we were talking on the phone one night, and he said, "Well, why don't you just come on into the office and let's talk?" And so we started talking, and he told me, he said, if you want to keep doing it, fine. If you're ready to try something different, well, we've got a spot for you here administratively. We'll create a spot for you here administratively. And I knew then that it was time, and he didn't have to tell me but once. And so that night I decided, and I had not one person on my staff had a clue. Not one person. Not even Mary, who had worked on my staff for 30-some-odd years. So I think the hardest thing I had to do was to go back the next day and tell my staff that I'd made this decision, because I was concerned about each one of them mm-hmm. and where they would land. But I knew they were all good, and I knew they would land in a good place. And so it was a good time for me, I think, and I'm always be grateful to Dr. Creed and Bob for giving me that opportunity, because I have thoroughly enjoyed my time in administration, and it's given me an opportunity to kind of still help, but kind of on the sidelines, behind the scenes, and help coaches with different things that they go through, that I know they go through because I've been there, I felt it, and I can try to help them in ways that maybe might make a little difference for them down the stretch.
The landscape of college athletics has changed. A generation or two ago, oftentimes the athletics director was an old coach mm-hmm. Who understood what the coaches and the players had been through. In some places, that's differed, where you have people who specialize in fundraising or in other areas for that. One thing that I had never really thought about, because I took this job at 25 and didn't know any better, but when Debbie Richardson joined our staff, a former coach at ETSU and on the staff at Georgia Tech, and we were sitting in, this would have been in the early 2000s, we're sitting in an administrative meeting, and Debbie was able to provide the outlook of how a decision that the department might make might affect the coach, might affect recruiting, might affect competition, might affect these other ways. And I think a lot of times the people who are on the outside looking in don't understand that it's very good, very wise to lean on somebody who's been there before.
Mm-hmm.
How has this job, moving over into an administrative role, serving as the senior woman administrator, how has that differed? How has that given you a different perspective on college athletics, Coach?
Well, as a coach, it's different. You don't really, that your administrators are really supportive, because I was fortunate. I had Debbie as my program administrator, and she was wonderful. She was always there at the right time, knew the right things to do, the right things to say, because she had been there, she had done it, made a real big difference. Kind of like I was telling Judy Stroud last weekend at the CAA Women's Basketball Championship, I was like, Judy, you're just so good at it. You could tell when you were coaching and you had an official who had coached before, you could just tell the way they handled coaches. They had been there. They knew what it was like. And so I've tried to carry that mentality over into administration. And somebody asked me one night, they said, have you talked to so-and-so? And after the game, I was like, heavens no, I don't talk to coaches when they lose. Mm-hmm. I'm the first one there when they win, but when they lose, I give them a little space. I go talk to them the next day. Because it's just tough. But I've tried, probably done a lousy job of it, but I've really tried to carry that over, just the knowledge that I've had, and try to speak on behalf of coaches. Not that I always agree with every decision every coach makes, but try to speak on behalf of coaches when I am representing the department administratively, even with our department, to try to speak on the behalf of coaches and their angle of thinking sometimes to help better clear the air of what you're considering looking at, if that makes sense. I probably didn't do a good job of explaining that, but I just think that it helps to I just think it's, I hope it's been of a big help. And I hope in some small way it's helped us athletically that I had coached and that I was able to give insight to that before we made decisions sometimes.
Has your changing your responsibilities? Of course, we see you at games throughout the academic year from fall, winter, spring. And we know that you're around nights and weekends, but have you been able to expand your interests a little bit now that you don't have to worry about recruiting and getting ready for camp and getting ready for school and everything?
It's really been busy. I mean, believe it or not, I've really been busy, and I have kind of wrapped myself up in the sports that I work with, and even the summers have really been busy because two of the summers that I've been working, we were dealing with COVID and the protocols with all that, and I was heavily involved in that. But I can remember my first Christmas break when I was used to get maybe 3 or 4 days at Christmas, maybe 5 if I was lucky, and getting a couple weeks off for Christmas and getting home thinking, oh my gosh, is this what this would be like? It was unbelievable that I got to spend all that time. And if anything, I think I was fortunate because my family kind of supported me. So I still had the support of my family. I still got to see my family. But even more so now since I have slowed down a little bit. But I'm still pretty involved in being here a lot and being on the weekends. And so in facing and looking at retirement, that part's going to be a little different for me. I can't imagine getting up in the morning and not picking up my phone first thing to see what's happened last night and what I need to work on today and that kind of thing. It's going to be a rude awakening for me after all these years.
Well, by the time this happened a couple of years ago, we were out at the Patriot Golf Course, walking along together, watching our women's golf team win another conference championship and head on to another NCAA regional. And we're walking along and we're standing there and you hear something and you look up and you said, Stan, there's a nut hatch right there. And I learned then that you are an avid bird watcher. Do you have a bucket list or a bucket bird that you're really trying to find, or is it just something you enjoy, you know, wherever you are?
I do. I love it. You could tell I'm getting older, but I love to sit out on my deck, and I have so many feeders in my backyard, which faces a pasture land and then a wooded area. So you can imagine I have a bird book, and I when I have a new spotting of a different bird, I always document that in my book. And I live in the homestead, the family homestead place, and so I'll mark my first sighting at the homestead and date it. I've enjoyed it. I told someone the other day, I said, when I retire, I'm going to be able to get these chickadees to eat out of my hand. That's going to be one of my goals here before too much longer. But no, I do. I love it. I love it. It's relaxing and just recognizing birds by their calls and seeing what new ones you're going to have come along, something I've always enjoyed. But, yeah, I think we both share that nature, that love of nature, Stan. I enjoyed our many walks on the golf course where we were following our lady golfers who are always going on to championships.
It's wonderful.
You're out.
Well, I'll share. I want to see the painted bunting, and from what I understand, the Carolina Beach State Park is the place to go for there, but you got to hit it right, just right. In between the snakes and the mosquitoes.
Oh, no.
And so I'm trying to figure out when we can get down there to that one. But the painted bunting is my bucket list for those people. And another question I have for you, I know you have an affinity for Carolina Beach music. And my wife, Claudia, wanted me to ask you a couple of questions about that. And that seems to run in the coaching the coaching community as well, because I remember Billy Lee thinking about it all the time, and then he's given that love on to his son Brooks, who's now, Lord help us, he's in his 40s, and Brooks is a DJ,
yeah,
and he plays Carolina Beach music. So two questions: the best Carolina Beach music song to dance to?
Oh, wow. Oh, Stan, you would get me on that one, wouldn't you? You should give me a little forewarning. I love them all. I love them all. I don't know.
Well, let me give you a chance to think about that one. We'll come around this one. How about the best one to sing along to?
I love all of it, but I especially love the Embers and Beautiful Things by the Embers. I love that song.
Wonderful. Wanda, to wrap up a little bit, you had a Hall of Fame coaching career long before you decided to retire from coaching. But since then, the Johnston County, the Big South Conference, the Campbell Hall of Fame have all come calling for you. And what does that recognition mean to you, Wanda?
Well, I think it just, I don't really see it as a personal recognition. I see it as, wow, there's somebody who has had a world of people behind them who have poured into her to, you know, you always feel like it's more of a group thing, I think, and certainly says that I've been blessed with good people around me my whole life, whether it be in Johnston County or the Big South Conference or here at Campbell. I have been so blessed with good people around me my whole life, and turtles don't get on fence posts, not very often, unless somebody picks them up and puts them there.
Was November 18th, Wanda Watkins Day, was that a turtle on the fence post moment for you as well, Wanda?
Well, it was. I really, to be honest with you, I really dreaded it because of the, I don't like that kind of limelight. And yet, when I got home that night, I couldn't even sleep. I was so excited. And I think, you know, what made it so exciting was all the players that came back and the people who had been instrumental in putting that day together and making it special for me and all those people too.
We had the fortune that day. Of course, most of our listeners know that Coach Watkins is our number one analyst for our women's basketball broadcasts. And that day she was busy greeting and visiting and sharing laughter and with hundreds of former players, colleagues, family members, and fans. I know you had to be hoarse that evening, but that day we had the distinct pleasure of having four of your former players who were later on your staff join onto the broadcast, in Rhonda Johnson and Tanya Caldwell and Karen Copeland and then Janice Washington as well. What did that mean? What does that mean to you to see people that you coach that went on to into the coaching profession too as well? And tried to share
it. Just makes you so proud. Those are special gals who taught me so much more than I ever could have taught them. And I'm just so proud of the young women that they've all become.
Finally, Wanda, can you put into words the impact that Buies Creek and the Campbell community have had on your life?
Well, it's hard. It's hard to put it into words and to do it justice. I mean, they took a little old girl from Johnston County and wrapped their arms around her and nurtured her for life. And it's been great.
I'm Stan Cole, and our guest today on Tales from the Creek has been Wanda Watkins. Thank you, Wanda, for sharing your Tales from the Creek.
My pleasure, Stan. Thank you.